y'all. You guys are so good looking. You know this? Like, huh? Yeah, you should cheer for that. Come on. Hey, I want to do something kind of fun this morning. So here's what we're going to do. In a second, I'm going to have you stand up, all right? And then if I want you to find somebody who is wearing a shirt that looks similar to yours, okay? And here's what I want you to do. It could be the same color. Like, if you can't find somebody, it could be the same style, design. If you can't find somebody, just make sure they have sleeves, okay? And here's what I want you to do. I want you to walk up to them, and I want you to pound it like this, knuckles, you pound it, and I want you to say you got some good taste, all right? On your marks, get set. Go find somebody and tell them they have good taste. Give it a pound it. Go, 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 quick. If you're online, give us a thumbs up. We'd love to have a thumbs up from you. Maybe a heart. You could share this video. That would be fantastic if you are watching online. Yes, the hoodie crowd. Sweatshirts and hoodies. All right. Come back to your chairs. Y'all have good taste. That's what I just heard. All right, you guys can take a seat if you want. I was thinking about early on in Jenny and I's relationship. We were dating, and we went on this trip with this group of people, and we went to Colorado. Has anybody been to Colorado before? Yeah, all right. Have you ever been to Pikes Peak before in Colorado? Oh, man, if you need to go to Pikes Peak, put it on your bucket list. It is incredible. Like, literally, you walk, and when you walk 100 yards, you'll feel like you ran 100 yards. You're up. You're so high up. It's just unbelievable the views that you can see. So we took this trip with this group of people, and we happened to be dating at the time. She was like, you need to make sure that they know we were like in separate corridors. We were, all right? So, she was like, you're going to get us in trouble. I was like, no. We go on this trip, and we go hiking and doing all this beautiful. So we had a whole trip planned, and we're up on the mountain, and the particular peak that we were on at this point was not super crazy hard hiking or anything. I mean, it was just kind of like rolling meadows up this mountain. And we're going up, and we get up onto this side of the mountain, and there is a tree that's fallen down, a log. And so Jenny and I were like, let's get out on the log, because we were just madly in love. Do you remember those days early on when you're like, she's just so beautiful, and when she holds my hand, I just tingle everywhere, and she's like, he is so handsome, and he's good looking, he's strong, he's a hard worker. I mean, I could keep going with all the things she said about me. I'll stop there. It went way further than that. I mean, it was almost gross how much she loved me. And so we're up on the mountain, and I'm like, hey, let's get on the log and let's take a picture. So we get on this log. We're standing there. I don't even know where the picture is. Do you? We evidently lost the picture, but Jenny's sister is standing out here. I've got my arm around her, and we're like, we're taking the picture. And they get the picture done, and then this pops into my mind as a young buck who's like courting the love of his life. I'm standing on a log with my someday-to-be wife standing on the log next to me, and I think this. I think I could pick her up and swing her around to this side and show her how masculine and strong I am, right? Like, right? Why are you guys saying, oh? Like, I'm going to show her how much of a beast I am. And I'm thinking she, like, all the things she said before, she'd be like, they were all true, right? Like, he's the guy. And so I don't have time to think about it. I'm just a young man who thinks he's strong in something. And so I pick Jenny up and I swing her out like this. And you guys know, if you took fifth grade science, what's about to happen, right? Like, because there is a thing that we all have heard of called gravity. Yeah, right. So here I am. I swing Jenny out like this. And in that split second where it hits me that gravity is a real thing, this split second, I realize I have two choices at this point. I either throw Jenny to her death and I move on in my life, right? Or I set her down lightly and I fall to my death. And so I threw Jenny to her death. I didn't really do that. I swing her out, and I start to realize we're all going down, and did you actually, like, land on your feet? I don't really know what happened to her, because I set Jenny down. She gets, like, poked by a stick in her neck or something. I fall and get impaled on a stick, and I'm, like, tumbling and falling, and everybody's like, what just happened? I pop up, and I'm like, I'm super cool. That's what happened. Like, I'm super strong, and It was terrible. It was terrible. I actually ruined the rest of our trip. Like we were supposed to go whitewater rafting. She still to this day will be like, you owe me whitewater rafting. You know, like doesn't let that one go. Like, and so just terrible. But one of the things that I thought about from this was that we all have things that we will slide off of one side to, right? It can be hard to stay in the middle. Like oftentimes you'll slide to one side or you'll slide to the other side of things. Like for instance, some of you are in a relationship right now, in a marriage, and things were going pretty well. Things were okay, but something happened, and now you feel like you're just having to walk this tightrope in your marriage. And you're nervous all the time about slipping off of one side or the other, and you're worried that you're going to set something off, and everything's going to explode, and there's going to be problems all over the place. Some of you are teenagers, and you have parents, and you just feel like you can't do anything wrong, right? You can't do anything wrong. Like, you can't do anything right. And you walk on eggshells around your parents all the time. As a matter of fact, you don't like being at your house. Some of you grew up like this as a teenager. You don't like being at your house because you're just worried you're just going to set something off all the time. You know what it's like, don't you, to feel like no matter what you do, like you're going to slip off to one side or the other. Well, this morning what I want to do is I want us to look at something, because these past few weeks we've been talking about money, possessions, and eternity, and I've been thinking about two edges that people tend to slip off of when it comes to tithing, all right? Now, let me tell you what tithing is if you're not sure what that statement means, really. Tithing is this. It's a biblical principle where someone who loves God gives 10% of their income back to God, all right? So does that make sense to you? If you're not a Christian, it makes zero sense. You're like, what? People give like 10% of their income away? Yeah, so what happens is a Christian who decides that they want to honor God will take 10% of whatever their income is, and they will give it back to God. And so it's a biblical principle. What I want to talk to you about today is that there are two different ways that people will slide off the log on this thing. And both can be a problem. Now, here's what I want to say before we go any further. I want to say this to you. I happen to know Rick, and he's not walking out at this moment because of what I'm preaching, because I'm about to say, before you walk out, so I didn't want Rick to be like, I'm not walking out for this. Love you, Rick. All right, man. Yeah, he's on call. See, before you walk out today and go, like, I know some of you are like, oh, my gosh, I showed up for the giving, tithing one, like, all churches talk about is money. That's all they care about. And like you instantly inside went like this, right? Before you do that, I get being a skeptic. Can I actually be transparent with you? Because my guess is part of the reason why you want to go like this internally is because you know that there is a self-serving reason for pastors to talk about money. I'll be honest with you, and it's not like you need me to say this, but I know that my salary comes out of the tithes that are given to the church. And I get how me preaching on this could feel incredibly self-serving. I'll tell you a little secret. It is so uncomfortable for me to preach on it. But it is a biblical truth. And it is something that needs to be said. And I get how you could sit out there and go, okay, you're being transparent. That's good. But I still don't trust that you don't have a jet parked out back and that you need a BMW to go with it. And that you, right? And so I want you to know throughout this sermon, my goal is to try to take some of your skepticism out and give you some things that you can hang your hat on and go, okay, maybe I can trust what he's saying. But I get being skeptical. Actually, this is a little bit different, but I have a buddy who I work with named David Birchfield. Do you guys know David? Raise your hand if you know David. Give it up for David. He's awesome. David's back there. One of the things that you guys may not, you probably know if you've known David for a while, is David has lost a tremendous amount of weight. It's above 135, is that right? Up, higher than that, or that's, he's giving me a thumbs up, and I don't know. Yeah, higher, more than that. David has lost more than 135 pounds. And as you guys know, I have needed to lose weight. And so David is a really kind guy. He has never once tried to sell me on it or said, Kent, you need to do it. But I'll be honest with you guys. I am a skeptic at heart. So for the last year, year and a half, however long David's been doing this, I watched him and I was like, I think it's going to fail at some point, right? Like, it's a harsh thing for me to say, but that's the reality. I never asked David about it. When I did ask about it, he would tell me what he was doing, and then I would be like, okay, and I wouldn't do anything with it. And then a few months ago, in August, Actually, when I got back from Israel, I had destroyed my knees hiking around in Israel. And I weighed 314 pounds. And I was like, I'm going to die. And so I talked to David and I found out what he did. And I started it. And guess what? I've lost 52 pounds since August, right? Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it. I wasn't trying to get like, but the reason I'm telling you that is this. I went from a skeptic to somebody who is transformed. And here's my question for you. What if your skepticism today was turned into transformation? What if you feel okay with sitting there going, here's what I'll give you. What if you did this? What if you just said, I will give you listening? Listen, it hurts. It doesn't hurt anything or cost you anything to listen, right? So what if today you internally uncrossed your arms and you actually just listened and gave me a chance to present what I'm going to present without you walking out and leaving and going, well, all this church cares about is money. Would everybody be willing to do that? Okay, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to stop talking about that and keep going on the sermon. Here we go. So there are two typical ways that I think at least Christians slide off into, slide off when it comes to tithing. Today I want to share those two sides and then I want to show you what's different, like a different way to think about tithing, okay? So here's the first one. Here's the first way that lots of people will slide off the log when it comes to tithing. First way is this. Christians slide off the end of the log with tithing is to neglect its importance. They'll just neglect its importance. They'll say it doesn't matter. Actually, a lot of times what they'll say, this view will say things like this about tithing. They'll say, well, that's an Old Testament thing. That was in the Old Testament. Jesus never talked about it, so we don't have to do it. I'm going to today show you where Jesus actually did talk about it. Did you know he did talk about this? So I'm going to show you today where Jesus did talk about it in a moment. But this is typically where people go with this. They'll say things like, it's not important to me. It's just not, like we have other things that our money goes to. Or they'll say this view views tithing as optional. At least it kind of treats it that way. I've heard people say a lot where they're like, we barely live off of 100%. I don't know how in the world we'd live off of 90%. Isn't that just kind of the truth? I mean, how many of you are just killing it and you're like stock, like you are Scrooge McDuck and you've got a swimming pool full of gold coins. Anybody in here? Like, it's hard, right? Some of you get raises and instantly you are again strapped because you start spending your raise. And you're struggling. So that's a reality. I don't want to fake like that's not a reality, that I can't make it off of 100%. How would I ever make it off of 90%? Here's the problem with that way of thinking. The problem is that way of thinking about tithing is that it ignores that the tithe is the way God has set up funding his kingdom. Can I just tell you a little secret about spirituality that most people ignore and don't actually ever think about? Is that just like when I said that I picked up Jenny and I moved her like this, how many of you went, oh, how many of you gave me that noise? Yeah, several of you, right? Why? Because you know how things work, right? Like, because you're like, because I'm not dumb, Kent, like you, right? You know how, hey, you know how things work. Can I tell you a little secret about the spiritual realm? There is a way things work. Did you know that? There's a way that things work when it comes to spiritual warfare. There's a way that things work when it comes to prayer. There's a way that things work when it comes to salvation. But what most Christians, kind of how we operate, is we just think this is all just magical. It's just magic, and God's just this magic genie in the sky that if I rub his lamp, he'll give me whatever I want, and he'll do whatever I want, and if he doesn't, I throw a big fit, I get mad, and I leave church. But that's not how things work. See, when it comes to the kingdom of God, God has set up a very specific plan for funding his kingdom, and I will tell you this, he doesn't actually need us. This is more about us needing him and us having a practical way to learn to live out faith. Guess what? If you live in this place where you're having to learn to live off of 90% plus God, guess what that requires of you? It requires faith. God doesn't need you. And stick with me, because at the end, I'm going to tell you some things that I hope you'll hear and you'll go, okay, he's serious about that. He's not trying to pad his pocket. So let me read the passage where I think we see God saying, this is how he chooses to fund his kingdom. Are you ready? So Malachi chapter 3, verse 10. I'm going to read this, tell you how preachers normally preach it, how I would normally preach it, and then I'll come back to the point of what I think is important for today. Verse 10, Malachi 3, bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I do not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be enough room to store it. Typically, if you can leave this up for me, Jason, how I would preach this is I would be like, see that part where he says, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing, there will not be room enough to store it. I would come in and I would say, did you know this is the only place in all of Scripture where God tells you, you can test him. Everywhere else in the world, you're not supposed to test God. No other place. It's actually wrong to test God. But when it comes to the tithe, God says to test him. And what does he say? He says, if you test him, if you actually bring the tithe to him, guess what he's going to do? He's going to pour out so much blessing into your life. And I would get up here and I'd say, you think that you can't, you think you're barely making it on 100%. You don't know how you'd make it on 90% plus God. I'm here to tell you, I don't know how you couldn't make it with 90% plus God, because I can't make it on 100% and just Kent by himself, right? And I preached that sermon. I'd be dancing around and y'all would be like, woo, get after it, boy. But can I take you to the part that we might have missed? See, he says this at the beginning. Did you catch it? Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse. Do you know what the storehouse is? The storehouse in the temple, there was a place called the Court of Women. What it was when you went into the temple, there was a place that everybody could go. And then if you weren't Jewish, you had to stop outside these doors. Jewish people could go in, men and women, into the Court of Women. And then past that, there was a Court of Men where only the men could go. I know that's kind of outdated, but it's what it was back then, right? And so in the Court of Women, you'd come in, and it was this large space like this. And there would be these colonnades on either side of it. And in those colonnades was the storehouse. And it was literally the place that people would bring their tithes and their gifts. And because their economy wasn't based off of a dollar like ours is, their economy was agrarian. So it was grain and it was cattle and all that kind of stuff. And they would bring animals and they'd bring grain and they might bring coins and they'd bring different stuff and it would get put into the storehouse. And what you may not know is the Levites and the priests who worked in the temple of God were not allowed to own property or to work other jobs, essentially. What they had was what was given to the temple, and that's how they fed themselves, and that's how they paid and afforded to do the ministry of the temple work. And so I want you to see why God is telling them to bring the whole tithe into the storehouse. Let's go back to that other slide real quick, Jason. I'm sorry. Why? That there may be food in my house. He asks them to bring the tithe. Why? Because they were starving, the priests and the Levites. They literally weren't eating. Listen, God wants his people to bring the tithe because they're starving ministry when they don't. Starving ministry. I need to tell you, before I tell you this next illustration for my sermon, that I typically try to stay away from the type of illustration that I'm about to tell you. Kind of something that could produce guilt or make you feel negative. I typically try to stay away from that because I think too many pastors use guilt on people, and that's just not at all what I'm interested in doing. But I need a way to try to help bring some transparency to what happens in a church. And so I want to be transparent with you, but please, if you start to feel guilty, I need you to know this about me. One, I do not know at all what any person in this church gives. It's actually hidden from me. David is the only person that like knows those names. He sees those checks. And so I don't see those things. There's accountability measures even set up around that. So David is accountable to other people. And so there's all this accountability, but I don't know. So if you see me looking at you today while I'm preaching, I don't really know if you give or you don't give. I also don't set my salary. When the elders start to talk about salaries and stuff, you know what they do? They say, Kent, would you leave the room? And I leave the room. and they talk about it without me. And I'm telling you today that no matter what happens out of today, my salary is not going up because, like, I don't get a commission off of this. That makes sense to you? I want you to know that because I want to share with you kind of the behind the scenes of what happens in a church so you can know, but please don't let this make you feel guilty, all right? We regularly, as a staff, have conversations that go like this. Miss Amber will come to me. Amber's in charge of our outreach in our connection groups, or connect groups. And she'll say, Kent, I'm thinking about, I have this idea for an outreach. I think it would be really fantastic, really be able to love on a neighborhood, do all this stuff. She'd tell me all this stuff, and I have to say this to her. I have to say, Amber, man, that's such a great idea. I don't know if we can afford the bounce house. Did you know that we, like, most of our conversations as a staff revolve around what we can afford and can't afford? You probably don't, because we try to do this thing in a way that you don't come in feeling that way, that you feel like this is a well-funded ministry and things are taken care of. But I'm just being honest with you. I will tell you this. I'm pretty sure that probably 90% of our church would not work for what our staff gets paid and the benefits that they get. Travis, would you agree with that? Travis is one of our elders. 90% of you probably wouldn't. At one point, my brother told me his Christmas bonus. He works for a big company. Told me his Christmas bonus, and his Christmas bonus was more than I made for an entire year. Would you do that? I'm not trying to say, like, we're great, and you, like, oh, wow, staff sacrifices. What I'm trying to get across is, like, ministry, it starves or it thrives based on what the people of God do with it. And it can be a very difficult, I will tell you this about our staff. I don't know a group of people who is better at squeezing life change out of a dollar than our staff. Like, yeah, we, because they'll sit around, they shouldn't, my dream for our church is that someday Amber comes to me and she says, can I get a bounce house? And I'm like, yes, get two. Like, that's such a good idea. Let's do this. Let's be a church that advances the kingdom. And you know what? We came out of COVID and every church is struggling. And I get, like, times are hard for you guys. So again, my goal is not to bring guilt to you. I just need you to know and for it to be a transparent thing. Because if it's hidden from you, you don't know, right? Listen, this next thing that I'm going to say, it may sting a little bit. And I want you to remember, I'm going to sit down so you don't get mad at me. It's not from me, okay? These are God's words. When we neglect the tithe, it steals from God. Can I tell you that? This view that slides off of this side of the log, when you neglect the tithe, when you say, oh, that's an Old Testament principle, or Jesus never talked about it, or I just don't know this is important, or I don't know how we'd ever live off of it, I just want you to know, God says that that's stealing from him. Listen to this. Can I read you the passage where he talks about this? Remember, we just read Malachi 3:10. Right before that, in verses 8 and 9, this is what God says. Will a mere mortal rob God? All of you are mortals, correct? None of you? Okay, got there. We're all in that room. Okay. Pretty sure. Joel, you're funny. This is what he says. Yet you rob me. They're going to ask the same question you ask. But you ask, how are we robbing you? He says, in tithes and offerings, you are under a curse, your whole nation, because you are robbing me. And then he goes on to tell them how they could get blessed. Test me in this and see if I don't open up the gates of heaven, the floodgates of heaven, and pour out so much blessing, you won't have room to store it. Like, God is making a point to say, when you do this, when you live this way, you miss out on the blessing. This is why I'm telling you right now, for me, I don't think that I would be living as high on the hog as I would on 90% with God as if I was trying to keep 100%. I just, not that I live high on the hog, but you get what I mean, right? Like, I don't think my life would be the same. We experience His blessing all the time. So that's the first one. You can slip off the edge into just thinking it's nothing. It's not important. Nobody should do it. Here's the second one, and I'm going to tell you, this one should be more fun for you because this is pointed right at me. You might even be like, Kent, you're doing this right now. All right? So here we go. The second way that Christians slide off the end with tithing is to overinflate its importance and become legalistic about it. It's easy for people to become legalistic and for it to become everything, and it's the most important thing. And this is where you hear, pastors, this is why so many people in our communities of faith have a real like negative reaction when pastors start talking about money. Because pastors have gotten up regularly throughout the years and they'll get up here and cry, oh, if the Lord would just provide, and if you people, we're gonna lock the doors, and until you guys give, we're not gonna let anybody out of here, right? And you're like, oh man, I can't, right? And this negative thing, because you're sitting there going, I'm struggling here, and you're asking for more money, and I know you have a jet out back, right? And it creates this negative impression, and there are people who make the tithe everything. They make it way overly important. And I'll tell you, most of these people do have a good intention, but they inflate the tithe so much. Some of you may even do this where you get like, your grandma sends you a check for 10 bucks and you cash it and you go out to eat or whatever. And you know, you buy 5 French fries because that's how much 10 bucks will get you now. And you're like, but you forget, you're like, oh, I didn't tithe off the 10 bucks granny gave me. And you like start to freak out. It can play itself out in this way too. You're like, oh, I forgot to tithe off that. I got to make sure and tithe off of it. There can be this sense where it becomes overly legalistic for us too. God, I want you to know God's heart isn't in either of those. His heart isn't in neglecting it. It's also not in it becoming the biggest thing in your life and the most important thing in the world. The Pharisees in Jesus' day, well, this is the one that they slipped off into. And I want you to hear this. Pharisees, they get painted as bad guys a lot of times when people preach, like this guy here. They weren't bad. They were just trying to honor God with their lives by obeying the law of Moses. But how it kind of ends up playing out is they miss the heart of God. So here's the scene for you. This is in section 138 of our Harmonies of the Gospel that's online. Click on the big face of Jesus and you'll get to it eventually. Jesus is at this dinner at a Pharisee's house. And the guy, what you might not know, if you go with us to Israel, one of the odd things that you'll see is in 2024 when you take that trip, you'll go into the bathroom and there will be these little pitchers in all the bathrooms. It's weird. Like they're in the sinks, they're right there. And what the pitchers are for is Jewish people, even to this day, really observant Jews will wash their hands, not because they've touched something bad, not to get germs off. They wash their hands as a ritual, purity ritualistic washing. And they'll wash their hands before they eat, before they do certain things. It's all a purity ceremony, all right? So this thing is happening clear back 2,000 years ago in Jesus' day. People are washing their hands for ritualistic purity. And Jesus doesn't wash his hands. He's one of those guys. I see them in the bathroom. I'm like, dude, please wash your hands, right? He doesn't wash his hands. And the Pharisee gets mad about it. And he's like, who's this guy think he is? He's not washing his hands. Like, you can imagine the religious implications. Like, if that was a really big thing religiously, and you're like, he's going to mess everything up. He's leading other people. I don't know if we can trust him. All these thoughts that start to come, right? And this is what Jesus does. He knows the guy's upset about it. And Jesus is so, how many of you love it when a religious person just gets like lit up? Do you, I even love it. Like I'm like, yeah, you needed that sucker, right? Jesus lights these religious people up. He says the word woe over and over again. We don't use woe a lot unless you're riding a horse, but we don't use it a whole lot. What it means, what he's basically saying is you are under condemnation. And Jesus will say things like, you think it's so important to wash your hands, but your hearts are dirty on the inside. Woe to you. You bind up these hard things for people to carry around. And like Jesus just goes after them. He does this twice at the end of his ministry and at the beginning of his ministry. He does this. I've made a comparison of the two things. It's online on that Harmony website that you guys can find. But he just lights them up. And one of the things that he lights them up about is this. I want you to listen. This is Luke 11, verse 42. He says, woe to you, Pharisees, because you give God a tenth of your mint, rue, and all other kinds of garden herbs. Picture this. A guy is growing some basil, and he would love some nice like some nice spaghetti sauce later. And so he's growing basil, and he goes and picks 3 leaves of basil, and he takes a little knife, and he cuts off just 10%, and he puts it aside to give to the temple, right? This is what he's saying. Do you get it? Like they're so legalistic about it that they're getting down to like their mint and their rue. I looked up rue. I was like, what is rue? Is that rhubarb? It's like this beautiful looking weed. I don't think I'm eating it, but they evidently did. He says you give God a tenth of your mint and rue. You go all the way even on these little things, but then listen to this. But you neglect justice and the love of God. You should have practiced the latter without leaving the former undone. You should have tithed, but you should have never left justice and love. I can't prove this, but I think Jesus thought about this sermon, like what he said to this guy, and he like honed it. This is what speakers do, at least. I really work on this craft. Like I think of this as a craft, preaching, and try to get better at it. And so I can't prove if Jesus does this, but when he says this later in Matthew, can I read you what he tags onto this when he talks about your mint and your rue? Listen to the tag that he puts in Matthew 23, 24. He says, you blind guides, you strain out a gnat, but you swallow a camel. Isn't that good? Like, gee, man, that was good stuff. Can you picture these guys over there with their mint and they're cutting off the little pieces to give to the temple? And they're over here like so worried about that. But they're neglecting the big things like justice in the world, caring for the poor, caring for those who are neglected, caring for those who are on the margins. They're neglecting the love of God in people's lives and they're just tying up these heavy burdens on people. They're so worried about their outward adornment that they're missing the inner heart. See, what I think is happening is that these people, these Pharisees, and for any of us, this can happen to a pastor or whoever, that when we slide off that side of the log on tithing, that what's happening is we're treating God like we're lawyers, like we're in a legal agreement with him. You should be treating it like you're a poet seeking to like fall in love with someone, right? Like imagine if I went to Jenny and I was like, well, you know, we legally have said that till death do us part when I'm sick or not, like, and I happen to be sick, so legally you need to, like, oblige me and bring me some soup, right? Like, you imagine me treating my relationship with my beautiful wife like it was a law contract? I should treat it like a poet who's trying to woo somebody, right? That's what a relationship with God is supposed to be like, not some lawyer legalistic thing of like, you have to tithe every single thing, but also not like, I'm not going to do anything about it. It should be like, it should be this relationship with God. I want you to notice what Jesus makes tithing. Can I point this out to you? Because this is where he talks about tithing. Jesus makes tithing a little thing. It's just a little thing. Notice that he says, you have practiced the latter. You should have practiced the latter without leaving the former undone. You should have gone ahead and tithed because that's just a little thing. And then you should have done these big things. You should not have neglected them thinking, oh, well, I did the little thing. I was legalistically, I was okay. I did all the things that the letter of the law said, but I didn't go to the heart of God. And what the heart of God is for people and to care about them. What he's concerned with is that they've taken the time to strain out this gnat of tithing their dill and their basil, but they're swallowing camels. They're neglecting the good, great things of God. And I want you to hear this again. For Jesus, tithing is the easy stuff. It's the no-brainer. It's the learner's permit. It's not what the experts do. If you're thinking about the way things work, this is how things work. It's just like the little thing you do. Tithing shouldn't, listen to this, tithing shouldn't even be taking up brain space because it's just what people who love God do. You hear me? Shouldn't even be taking up brain space. It's just what you do. My wife and I were talking about this the other day. We were on a walk and we were talking about, I don't even know what brought it up, but we were like, it's funny to us because neither of us grew up in a family that tithed. My parents at best tipped. Like, I think Red Lobster probably got better tips than the church did. You know, like, they at best tipped. They didn't tithe, and Jenny's parents didn't tithe. And so we both grew up in these households. This was not a value for them. But for some reason, when we came to know Jesus, for both of us, it became a value for us. And I thought a lot about why that is for me. And I'll tell you what I think it is. I think it's for me. Because I don't remember somebody like telling me I had to or whatever. For me, I think tithing was just reflecting the character of God. Like all I knew about Jesus was that he gave himself away for me. And if all he wants back from me is for me to serve him with my life and to give 10% of my income, it was like, that's a no-brainer. Like, I'll do that all day long. And what I found, I'm thankful that I was young enough and I was dumb enough to just be like, okay. And I just did it, because what I found is that he just provides and he provides and he provides and he provides, because there is this physical, practical thing that when I actually take that step of faith, like, you have to trust him. Yeah, you're going to need to budget. You're going to need to work on some things. You're going to need to think about how you spend your money. But when you actually do that, guess what? He shows up. He shows up in a big way. And don't tell me you don't have money. You don't have the resource. The problem is you choose to spend your money in other places. You have the latest iPhone in your pocket and you're paying a monthly fee to that, but you won't give to God. And I hate to say it, but I'm not gonna say he is saying this, but what if he is saying, you're stealing from me so you can have another cool gadget in your pocket? Like, I don't know. And some of you are like, see, that's self-serving, Kent. So here we go. Let's get off the self-serving thing. Because what I want is not something from you. I want something for you. Like, I want you to stop missing his blessing. I want you to stop thinking that that 10% is better than the 100% that God can give you when you give up the 10% to fund his kingdom. Because I promise you, he does not need you. He just pleasures to use you. Do you know why humans were created in the first place? He didn't need you. He created you because he wanted to be in relationship with you and to have you steward his earth. Everything he's given you was as a stewardship opportunity in relationship with him. Don't you know he created Adam and Eve and he said, you will have dominion over the earth. You'll have dominion over the animals and the plants. That was their role. That's your role still to this day. It's his pleasure to use you. So there's an arrogance to think, well, it's all mine and I'm just going to keep it all and I'm not going to give it all. I'm not going to trust him even in this. It's going to be hard to trust him in other things, don't you think? Because this is just a little thing. There are big things like love and justice. So here's me trying to help you see that this is not about me patting my pocket. If you think that's why I'm asking you to do this, if that's really your argument against tithing, do this for me. Get on Google. You can do it right now. I don't care. Get on Google. Find a really good Christian church. Find somebody like My Church or Regeneration Church or Victory or Grace. Find one of the churches out there that you think is doing a pretty good job in our community and tithe to them for the next 6 months. Give your tithe to them. Because I promise you, I will tell you this, my salary isn't going up based on what happens from this sermon. It just isn't. This isn't about me trying to pad my pockets. It's not about me trying to get a raise. This is about you missing out on what God wants to do in your life because you're unwilling to trust him and take that step with him. What would it look like if you just said, okay, I'm going to pick one of those churches and give? I'll tell you this. This is our commitment because I believe 100% that when God says, test me in this, that he means test me. So this is our commitment from our church. And this is another one that helps you feel like I have nothing to lose. We'll give you a 6-month money back guarantee. If you actually tithe and you give it here and 6 months from now, you haven't seen God's blessing, we'll give it back to you. Every cent that you pay or given, you don't pay it really. Every cent that you've given, we'll give it back to you. I've never once in my 20 plus, 25, I don't know how long I've been in ministry, a long time. I've never once, maybe over 30, I've never once had to give anybody their money back. If I did, I'm going to tell you, I would ask some questions, and then I don't know if I'd keep doing this, because I don't want to follow a God who doesn't make good on his word. Do you? That's why to me it's not a gamble. Some of you are like, you're really going to do that? Yeah, it's not a gamble. He's God. He's rock solid. I've already done it in my own personal life and I've seen the results. So why wouldn't we as the church take that gamble for you and say, do it, try it, give for 6 months, and if you don't see God's blessing, come back and we'll give you every penny back. Every penny back. Because I believe 100% that God wants something for you. He does not need your money. He does not need your money. It's just how he chooses to work and operate in this world. And I think most of it's because because he wants you to be a person who actually lives out of faith. Have you ever thought about what if on the other side of that river there actually is something that you're missing out on? What if you actually are missing out on a blessing? I know for me and my family, my parents were constantly in struggle. Constantly cars breaking down, stuff going wrong, things, there was constant, like, I probably wouldn't say to them, cursed, but like, it's kind of what God says. You steal from me, you're cursed. I hope that you'll have the guts to take this challenge. Again, pick a really great church, give to them. I hope for your sake that you'll come back and you go, Karen, it was crazy watching what God did. This morning, if I could ask one thing, if you're still sitting there and you're like, yeah, I don't know about that, you got your arms crossed inside, can I just ask you to do this one thing? And this is nothing other than this. We're about to go to communion. When you go to communion, when you pick up the little cup, and I know it's not the best tasting thing, and when you rip off the top and there's a little wafer for bread, when you take that, will you break it? Will you just close your eyes and picture Jesus on the cross giving himself for you? And then take the bread. And then when you open up the juice and you take that, will you close your eyes and think about his blood? Hear it splattering on the ground. See it all over his body. See it dripping down his face. And think about the fact that he did that for you. He gave for you. There was no guarantee in it. He gave for you. If you don't do anything else today, at least go to communion and embrace the God. Embrace the character of a God who would give everything for you. He came for you. Will you guys stand up? We're going to sing this song. You can go any time during this song to communion. This is your time to spend with Jesus.